Another hour of the program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. 1 hour behind us, two more big hours of the program coming up. You can slide in at 1-800-636-8686. Emails RomanHavatake.com, Twitter, BW Weber, Weber with two B's. I appreciate all the Twitter love for the fashion choice. Yes, rocking a pocket square, trying sartorial splendor, attempting on CBS Sports Network. 40 minutes from now, we'll get back to the NBA. Already brought you the details of the social media beef between Patrick Beverley and Paul George going 2-on-1 against Dame Lillard, who then made the Sixers pay, dropping 51 on Philly yesterday. We'll put the playoff picture into focus. We know the top seeds in the West and East. Overall, top seed doesn't matter. There, by definition, is no home court advantage in a bubble. So you got the Lakers and the Bucks, as anticipated, being on that top line. We'll go through some of the combinations and talk about a missed opportunity for Zion Williamson and the Pelicans. Feels like Zion's biggest challenge moving forward is going to be his body. Can he just stay in the proper shape he needs to be the transformational player that he has been immersed in the NBA and he was before he got hurt at Duke last year? In this hour, we also hope to connect with Mike Jones of USA Today talking football. But I promise more of your tweets. Let's get that done. Canadian Hitman. I always drop the Big Ten and no one complains about it. Signed, Ron Jeremy. Nicely produced. Kenny in Albany. The Mike Jones reference just solidified your place in the jungle. I'll do it for the rest of the show. Mike Jones? Who? Mike Jones. When laconic, I'm not as suburban as I sound or look. The narrative that sports media types are rooting for the college football season to be postponed makes about as much sense as Beaks in Studio City wanting the Del Taco across the street from him to close down. Wore the fringe benefits of free tacos after every shift.
Fat.
It's now a Taco Monday. Weber in for Rome. So in addition to running a mini marathon, of course, and spending several hours in the sweat lodge that I've converted the bathroom in my glorious studio apartment into, I watched a lot of golf over the weekend. Coming up, we'll get back to the college football takeaways. I don't want to do 3 hours on college football today because I'm back with you tomorrow, and it feels like that's going to be the show wall-to-wall because, and I know the audience is always changing, we have multiple reports now confirming what the Detroit Free Press put out. Also, Dan Patrick, want to give him attribution. Big Ten has voted to cancel football. No college football in the Big Ten this fall. Hoping to play in the spring. Big Ten presidents voted yesterday 12-2, canceling football for now. Nebraska and Iowa, the lone vote saying, we want to play. We'll give you more perspective. But I understand the balancing act because some of you come to the jungle for the entertainment, and it is broadcasting. I want to keep everybody as satisfied as possible. So we'll get back to the college football. I'll give you more thoughts from someone who has spent 30 years in the college football business, not speaking for Pac-12 networks or any of the fall sports that apparently I'm not going to be working. If, in fact, the reports are true with the Pac-12 chancellors and university presidents scheduled to meet tomorrow, but it feels like this is going to be the sequence. Big Ten confirms what we feel to be true with the official announcement tomorrow. They're pushing back fall sports. Pac-12 follows. Then we find out about the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 because the NCAA has been absent from college sports, a dereliction of duty for decades. Let's talk golf. In part because the coverage was phenomenal on CBS. With a reminder, get ready for 9 consecutive hours of nonstop Europa League action. I'm not going to have college soccer. You can watch the best in the world on CBS Sports Network, reliving all of the quarterfinal matches tomorrow night, starting at 6 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. What a weekend it was in San Francisco. Garrett, can you sneak in any Tony Bennett? We should have worked this out in rehearsal at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm sorry to do it on the fly. I will tell you up front, I am the biggest San Francisco honk you're going to find. Got very lucky to come west for college. Have been here in the state of California since 1987, so you know where I left my heart. We're little cable cars are halfway to the stars. Beyond my connection to the city by the bay, Jim used to call it a city by a body of water with the NoCal SoCal rivalry, I thought the action was tremendous. So let's start with how it all wrapped up yesterday at Harding Park in San Francisco. If you follow golf, and I'm not as immersed in it as I used to be, candidly, because I don't cover it professionally, but I think like a lot of you, I love having a major run during the weekend as background. TV, audio, especially with those visuals and high def, although my TV was purchased in San Francisco in 2002. It was a phenomenal TV product, and that leaderboard was filled with glittering names. How many people had a legitimate championship to win the first major of the year? And if you were just chatting with friends on a group text, were you going Koepka for three-peat? He was talking on Saturday. He didn't back it up on Sunday, pointing out that Dustin Johnson only has one major on his resume. Did you think it would be Bryson DeChambeau devouring that course the way he does 6,000 calories before lunch? But if you've been paying attention, the young star who won the event with Bay Area ties, Colin Morikawa, is not a huge surprise that he broke through. Because, and now this is going to be unfair, but I'm in the hype business, there are parallels to Tiger Woods. This is a bit contrived, and nobody wants to give him that kind of burden of expectations. Remember when Jordan Spieth was going to the Hall of Fame? Remember when David Duval was going to take down Tiger? Golf is witchcraft. We know that to be true. But Morikawa, if you follow the sport, beyond what's been happening lately, won in Ohio a month ago. Decorated amateur. I knew him because I'll do the Pac-12 affiliation one more time. I had to do a feature, some basketball game I was doing, you know, around the Pac-12. Morikawa just blowing away the competition when he played his collegiate golf at the University of California across the bay in Berkeley. But to take the Tiger linkage one step further, both from Southern California, both remarkably composed at a young age, and if you're just looking for numerical connections, as Morikawa outlasted that leaderboard with all the marquee names, won his first major championship at the age of 23. Also the same age Tiger was when he won his first PGA championship. Jim Nantz was handed the card late. You could tell he wanted it a little bit earlier. And if Jim, who is unflappable, shows a little bit of emotion, you know he wanted the stat to put a period at the end of the sentence. Colin won his first major in his 29th start on tour, if you throw in the amateur appearances. Adam Hawk is fact-checking me right now. Call Nantz, not me. Tiger's 29th start on tour, 1997 Masters. Hello,
world. Tiger!
So let's pump the brakes, because we want Morikawa to be his own individual. But I don't think this is a fluke at all. Not an aberration, nor an anomaly. And maybe he benefited from one of the things that I enjoyed watching the great coverage on CBS, not having a gallery. Now, you can argue both sides here. You could say that he would have fed off their energy, and he would have had the additional gusto from a crowd that loves an underdog, especially in the Bay Area, rocking the blue and gold of California. But the opposing view would be, I thought all those guys were relaxed. There was a lot of smiles, even on Sunday at the first major of the year, with all that was on the line. It felt to me like somehow these guys, the best in the world, taking on a course that was challenging but fair, and that's why I enjoy the PGA. Yeah, you can rip it with obscure champions. Where's Y.E. Yang when you need him? but it's a fair setup that is not absurd. Not like the U.S. Open with the body bag scores and the lightning fast greens. And when we get to the Open at Wingfoot and Mamaroneck in the suburbs of New York City, you know that if you can break par, that's a monumental achievement. I thought it was a fair test, difficult yesterday, but not over the top. So maybe Morikawa was a bit more relaxed because if he blew a putt, he didn't get the, oh, as I do now, my best Michael Winslow from Police Academy. I'll do human beatbox later. It's Brian Weber in for Jim Rome. You could slide in at 1-800-636-8686. College football, the dominant theme today, but we're talking PGA Championship now. So from a viewer standpoint, I didn't miss the crowds at all. And I applaud both ESPN and CBS, the primary broadcaster, for not sweetening it with fake crowd noise. We knew what we were watching. The first major of the year. And all that comes with it. And I thought it was a tremendous viewing experience. Especially because there's always the emotional spectrum. So here's a star now being minted potentially. And Colin Morikawa versus Dustin Johnson having another regrettable Sunday. Because at this point, it's a daunting trend. Johnson clearly does not like to sleep on the lead on a Saturday night going into the final 18 holes of a major, because that was the case this weekend. He's now 0-4 when he's had the lead after moving day at a major championship. Unable to hoist that trophy other than the one U.S. Open. But if I'm putting Morikawa now in the category of someone who has the ability to win multiple majors, shouldn't Dustin Johnson have several majors at this stage of his career? And he ain't 23 anymore. In fact, if we're talking about trophies, the only thing that Colin did wrong yesterday was hoist the Wanamaker trophy, and the top came off. Can we just now have a moment where we reach out to the trophy manufacturers? I think it's Tiffany's. Typically, I'm stealing from Garrett Ritt here, Garrett. Garrett, you focus on the board. I'll steal material from you, okay? You were not the only thought out there. But yes, follow G. Ritt at iwantasnickersbar.com. This was going out there with the epic fail, most 2020 thing ever. Morikawa lifting the trophy. Top comes off. No harm, no foul. Not like in 1920 when somebody bludgeoned a prostitute with the Stanley Cup. Minor miscue. Life goes on. Other things that stood out during the PGA Championship. And I have to tread lightly here because there's already been an eye open the door, a BMI reference or two in the first hour of the show. I don't think Bryson DeChambeau is fat. Clearly, he is smarter than all of us. The physics major from SMU deciding that he's going to be the ultimate warrior of the links and just destroy the golf course. And so far, you cannot argue with the results. He was in contention with three holes to go yesterday. He has been obliterating these courses because he decided to go through a transformation of his body, the wacky diet, just pounding protein shakes all day long. And now at this point, he's just feeling himself. Might have seen the other day. His goal is to make it to 130 years old, like old man Ritt, crushing those three musketeer bars. But, and we'll do it briefly because it's now within the 72-hour rule back to Friday. The internet broke when DeChambeau ripped another massive drive. And this was weird to me. We keep saying, and I'm guilty of it as well, always looking for the hook, something to talk about, hashtag team content. DeChambeau, the physics major, did he skip that day at class when they got into the principle of leverage? Because after he had another gargantuan drive, reaching over to pick up his tee, used the driver as something to brace that massive frame, and snapped off the head. But because there were no fans on the course, they were able to make the quick adjustment, hustle all the way to his car where he had the backup driver, and he did not miss an opportunity that he needed a driver. So another, and I'm sure this was all mapped out because Vince McMahon is behind the PGA as well. Another byproduct of not having fans on the course, no gallery, meant they could get to the car and back in time for Bryson's next opportunity to use the drive. And since we're talking fat, as the fill-in host, I cannot call Phil Mickelson hefty. And I'm not taking shots at anybody. I'm aware of the chatter on Twitter, BW Weber, Weber with two Bs, but I got to be completely upfront. I'm not a massive Mickelson fan. I find him a bit contrived, but I thought he was tremendous on the CBS broadcast. Sign me up for Mickelson every week. Now, the issue is going to be he's got $90 million in career earnings, plus endorsements, unless you think he blew it all on gambling. But it'd be difficult to go down that NBA kind of path. Antoine Walker thinks it's hard to blow $90 million. So Mickelson has generational wealth. He doesn't need the gig. And maybe that's why he was so relaxed. But I thought he was insightful. I thought he was entertaining. I thought he took us inside the ropes, gave us the player's perspective, and even found a way to go viral working just a little bit blue when he had the on camera with Jim Nantz and Nick Faldo, Sir Nick Faldo, in the Tower at 18. And I was watching this unfold, and I'm thinking, he's not really doing this. Because there are certain old jokes that we used to tell in a madman kind of context. I'm not justifying, I'm just saying the world was different. So you get the standard introduction. Hello, friends. Hello, Phil. And they welcome Mickelson into the tower, and he's already smiling. You could tell he's got this one in his hip pocket. And he says, happy to be here. There are three things I do well. I play golf. I talk about golf. Pause. It's an old joke. But I guess it didn't cross the pond. Sir Nick was not familiar with this one. Faldo takes the bait, unless this was all scripted. And God bless CBS if they pulled this one off. Faldo says, what's the third thing? And Mickelson just smiles. Because the punchline is something like a yo mama joke. Or ask your spouse. And Nantz, because he's the best and smoothest, just kept on moving. At that point, I'm surprised that Phil didn't ask the fellas to describe a submarine or if their favorite author was named IP Daily.
Let's keep it real.
We're not talking Tiger today because he was irrelevant. Adam Hawk now has awakened from his slumber. Yes, he put together a few nice holes yesterday, but the problem with Tiger, in addition to his body betraying him, pushing 45 and not playing enough competitive golf to be in the mix, the putter was just atrocious. Betrayed him time and time again over the weekend. And just do the eyeball test. He could use some shoulder pads because he looks tiny. He looks old because he's middle-aged now compared to the strongman competition that the PGA Tour has become. Who says you can't talk golf in an entertaining fashion? Do I say golf correctly? Put it next to college football. 1-800-636-8686. At some point this hour, we hope to connect with Mike Jones of USA Today talking NFL. Straight ahead, I'll hit the gridiron. Why can't the football team that plays in our nation's capital do anything right? Details coming up. Thanks for sharing part of your Monday with us. I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Brian Weber back with you. In for Jim Rome. You can slide in at 1-800-636-8686. Emails, romeandhaveatake.com. Twitter's your best bet. BW Weber, Weber with two Bs. In 15 minutes, back to the NBA. An early look at how the playoff brackets have come together. I'm not going matchup by matchup, but we'll get you set for if, based on what we've seen in the seeding games, going to be a fabulous postseason. Now let's talk NFL. Mike Jones, terrific reporter and columnist for USA Today, is our guest. Be sure to check out his Football Jones podcast. Mike, we've not chatted in quite some time. How are things with you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
I am doing very well, and I want to connect what have been the primary points of discussion prior to you joining us today. So we've been talking about the issue in college football with the apparent news coming tomorrow that the Big Ten is going to cancel the football season. We've also spotlighted how effective the bubble has been in the NBA, the issues in baseball. So how would you evaluate how the NFL is doing, responding to how the world has changed as training camps roll along?
Yeah, well, you know, I think we're still a little bit of wait-and-see mode with the NFL. Obviously, players have been tested daily ever since they first reported. The rookies on right around the 21st, and then the quarterbacks a couple days later, and then the whole team on the 28th. You know, it was there's been, I wouldn't say a huge number of cases when you compare the fact that, okay, I think as of last Thursday, it was about 56 positive cases, and there are about 2,600 players, but there are every day another player goes on the COVID list, whether that's because he tested positive or because he came in contact with someone and they want to be careful, and so then they test him again. We've seen a coach like Doug Peterson of the Philadelphia Eagles out with the coronavirus, but things continue to roll along, as you said. And in later this week for some teams, and then next week for other teams, they'll actually get on the field and begin the full practicing because the first couple weeks have just been strength and conditioning. But now, as guys are more contact with each other, we're going to see how they're doing as far as trying to minimize risks of the coronavirus and how they do at limiting the spread.
Talking NFL with Mike Jones, USA Today. Check out the podcast, Football Jones Podcast. Mike, you know Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. I saw he tweeted a few hours ago that the NFL does have the ability within the framework of the collective bargaining agreement to move the draft back from its scheduled time last week of April in Cleveland all the way to June 1st if they want to. If they want to push it further back, then they have to have permission from the Players Association. If we're going to presume the majority of college football is going to be postponed until the fall, how do you think the NFL reacts to that development?
Well, I know that they are really watching this closely. Just this morning, I was texting with a number of talent evaluators asking, hey, how would you handle draft evaluations if there is no college football season this fall and it's not until the spring? They really don't know right now. They said, fortunately, we've got time to figure this thing out. But they don't even know how they're going to go about scouting their own pro games. You know, the advanced scouting for upcoming opponents, how they're going to scout games when they're, you know, making their list of guys that might become free agents. Right now, they haven't heard from the NFL what's going to be permitted. So I've talked to a number of scouts who don't know if they're even going to be getting on a plane to evaluate talent this football season. And so because of that, definitely with the college season, they're kind of in a holding pattern. And, yes, like you said, they could push it back. And, you know, if the season – for college football was in the spring, I think that would be something that not only the NFL, but the Players Association as well would understand that, okay, we need to have the best possible setup. The college football season has to be complete. We have to have a full body of work to be able to evaluate this. But then, you know, it's going to be challenging because, you know, you think about recovery time from these players that say that they're banged up, and will they be ready for training camp, or will they have to sit out a while? A whole lot of questions that nobody really has the answers to. And, you know, when you do find one answer, that kind of triggers several other questions. And the NFL right now, they can only control so much. They're testing their guys. They're trying to make plans for the season being uninterrupted. They also have to worry about contingency plans. And then, it's like you said, as far as the draft goes, they know that's a little bit of ways off, but they're really watching closely just in case they have to react.
I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome, spotlighting the NFL with Mike Jones of USA Today and the Football Jones Podcast. Mike, a year ago at this time, as we were looking forward to college football kicking off, if you think about the landscape, Joe Burrow was projected to be a fifth-round pick, and then everything changed with one of the greatest seasons we've seen in the history of college football. How challenging is it going to be for Burrow to duplicate what we've seen from all of these young quarterbacks? Think about Mahomes, already winning a league MVP in a Super Bowl, and he's still in his early 20s. how big of an obstacle does Burrow have this year, not only playing at Cincinnati, but all the work he missed because the world shut down, there were no OTAs or rookie camps, and everything had to be taught virtually?
Right. I think that that is going to be the big challenge, not only for Joe Burrow, but for a lot of rookies, because for them, normally, they get drafted. A couple weeks later, they get the introduction to their team's playbook. They're on the field for rookie minicamp, and then OTAs roll around, and they're on the field with the veterans. They're repping out these plays. They're getting comfortable. Well, like you said, they haven't been able to be onto the field. All they have been able to do is do classroom work. Now, the good thing is, because they've done those classroom works when they hit the field this week or last week during walkthroughs, but when they hit the field, they should at least have an idea of what they need to do, but there's no better teacher than actually doing it. So it could be a struggle for them out the gates, and that's why it's important to have a veteran on that team, quarterback in that quarterback room, that not only can he play if needs be, but he can be a mentor, another set of eyes. And so I think you do have to kind of temper expectations because, you know, we've seen that when a rookie goes in there, when he hasn't really fully prepared, it can be a struggle. But of course, we saw, you know, 10 years ago with the lockout, there were a number of teams that had rookie quarterbacks, Carolina being one of them with Cam Newton. Their coaching staff really had to do a good job during training camp of making sure he got as many reps as possible so he's ready. So I imagine that Zach Taylor and the Cincinnati Bengals, they're not going to bother giving reps to a veteran backup. They're going to give as many reps as possible to Joe Burrow so he can do this as much as he can. But the other difficult thing is, unlike in that lockout year, they still had preseason games. There are no preseason games this year. So that first month of the season this year, it is going to basically be like a dress rehearsal. There could be some ugly football, especially for rookies. And then maybe middle of the year, they'll kind of hit their stride. But I think that, yes, you want to see what kind of talent, you know, show these guys are going to put on. But you have to know that, look, they're basically just thrust into this thing without a lot of prep.
Mike, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for the information. Glad we had a chance to reconnect and look forward to talking more football with you again here on CBS Sports Radio.
I appreciate you having me. Have a great day.
Mike Jones, I used to chat with him when he covered the football team in our nation's capital, when he worked for the Washington Post. Have I mentioned I used to work for NFL Network? Adam Hawk again, now just keeping track on the other side of the glass. So I've bashed Tiger, and I've read my resume. Mike Jones. Who? And I saw this because I was looking up Mike's work when he used to work for the Washington Post. I Googled Washington, and this popped up. Did you catch what the team that plays in our nation's capital tried to do on Twitter yesterday? So incompetent, announcing a new Twitter hashtag. It was supposed to be 1932, 1932, the year the team was founded in Boston when they were the Boston Braves. Now you know the rest of the story. Except you can't hashtag only numbers. Not even Garrett Ritt with his full complete sentences would make that kind of social media faux pas on Twitter. And I'm not bashing somebody who's making minimum wage as a social media coordinator. But can Washington do anything right? Poor Ron Rivera is being asked to transform the product on the field, turn a losing franchise into one that's relevant, be the senior director of HR, changing the culture of a toxic workplace, and apparently now he's got to go on Twitter to make sure they can get the tweets out correctly. You can hit me up. Don't hashtag it numerically. B.W. Weber, 1-800-636-8686. As we get closer to the final hour of the program, an hour from now, we'll talk NBA with Steve Kyler from BasketballInsiders.com. Straight ahead, in addition to more college football conversation, we'll spotlight hoops. The Greek Freak can't hit free agency for another full calendar year. So how important is it for the Bucks to win now? That's coming up first.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brian Weber on CBS Sports Radio.
Pushing our way forward on a jam-packed Monday, but you can be a part of the program. Traditionally, I take phone calls selectively, But I'm open to having that conversation with you at 1-800-636-8686. Emails roman@havatake.com. Twitter's your best bet. That's B.W. Weber. We've backloaded the program. So if you want to get interactive, do it now. And then the top of the hour, final hour, features a conversation talking baseball with Joe Sheehan. And then an hour from now, NBA analysis from Steve Kuyler, basketballinsiders.com. So you got time, but it's getting late early on the program. I'll try to put the playoff matchups in the NBA bubble in the focus in a moment. First, more tweets. Monica's Cheese. War trying out the bed in the IKEA and then doing some writing at the desk. Hey, Hawk. Rome doesn't like it when you do the IKEA bit with him. I realize you give me less than zero as the fill-in host, but could you pretend like you give a damn?
The simple math says that's 50 hours on hold.
Jim Benton. I bring my own crowd noise. Justin Thomas dropping F-bombs after missing putts. Oh, that was unfortunate. That was an audible obscenity. You could not miss any syllable of that one. Which was another reason why I thought the PGA coverage on CBS was phenomenal. Jesse in El Paso, Mr. Assistant Pimp, is the putting surface in golf really green? Looks great to me. Signed, Garrett Ritz. War running red lights due to color blindness. I'm sorry. That one got me.
Mark it down. That's an H.
The issue is when Alvin finally gets a day off. Garrett moves from the back row, and he's right in my line of sight. And we're talking NBA in a moment. But because the best part of the program is the show within the show, I worked with Adam and Garrett elsewhere. Both were my producers briefly, one of whom used the word fornicate on the air in our last conversation before he departed said network. They both clearly are more talented, hardworking, and career savvy than yours truly, because they've blown past me. But now I have Rit just eyeballing me the entire show, and I have a lot of issues about, and this is going to sound completely self-aggrandizing on a Big Word Monday. It's not like when I worked as an intern at NBC at 30 Rock in college, I got into the elevator with David Letterman knowing I had received the memo, do not make eye contact with David Letterman and do not say hello. This is before Ellen a million years ago, so I'm not saying I'm above interacting with the XR4TI, but because there's a lot of theatrics into a quality radio program, especially when you're filling in for the best in the business in Jim Rome, I'll be doing my thing. I'll look over. I got the Manson lamps from Rit over there in the midst of a $100,000 bar trying to hit the right button, and I got Hawk deep asleep, only waking up when I take a marginal shot at Tiger Woods or mention I used to work for NFL Network. No NBA TV on the resume. I was the television sideline reporter of the Golden State Warriors. So I love basketball as much as I love football. And thankfully, with the apparent news that we're not going to have college sports in the fall, we'll get back to that starting the final hour of the program. I'm going to have a lot of free time coming up. No college soccer or volleyball, or water polo, for Uncle B-Web to call on Pac-12 networks if reports are true. But I'm going to, like the rest of you, I know the TV ratings have been down slightly, and all the same people who are pretending to be epidemiologists, had to sound that one out on the radio, and mocking Corona bros for having concerns about player safety, are reveling in the fact that NBA ratings have been flat coming off the restart, and they want to come up with a reach logically that it's because players are taking a knee during the anthem or are articulating their views on social justice, which I think is complete nonsense. I think that theory has no validity whatsoever. NBA ratings are flat because the big chunk of their young audience doesn't watch TV traditionally. They may not even watch these games. They get all the highlights on the gram, and then they want to see the back and forth between Paul George and Patrick Beverley signing up for a 2-on-1 against Damian Lillard. So the NBA is going to be just fine. If you don't want to watch because you have a problem thinking that somehow a professional athlete speaking his mind in the name of social justice, that's a you problem. As LeBron James said, and that applies to the commander-in-chief for now as well, if you don't want to watch, don't watch. If you've been watching, the product has been highly entertaining. It's also been wildly unpredictable. Raise your hand. I can see you through the radio.com app. If you had Devin Booker and the Suns becoming the 1973 Lakers, you can't beat this team in the bubble. Or if you thought the Lakers, once they had wrapped up the top seed in the West, would suddenly be incapable of maintaining any offensive rhythm. And you can say, because these are seeding games, the teams that know they're going to be playing deep into September, and I guess October, I didn't look at the schedule, I should. As mentioned, I have a lot of time to go day by day. They're pacing themselves. And we know that's LeBron's MO because of all the mileage and all the experience and every year playing virtually into the month of June. I can't fault him if he's going to take it easy in a game that has no meaning for the Lakers, understanding they're the top seed in the East. Milwaukee locking up the top seed as we anticipated. And unlike the Lakers, who could have a really juicy and challenging opening round matchup, could be Lakers v. Portland. Remember, after the tragic news of Kobe Bryant passing away, Damian Lillard buried the Lakers. Went out there because he knew the whole world would be watching, and that was his homage to Kobe. He went Kobe style and was virtually unstoppable. Blazers are legit. And we'll talk about it coming up in the final hour with Steve Kyler from NBA.com. Skinny Melo has been a factor. You know about Lillard and McCollum and Nurkic and even Gary Trent Jr. Portland has impressive depth as well. But I don't want to be a victim of something I mock that is a reality. 60% of the nation lives east of the Mississippi River. East Coast bias is real. That's why it's been great to have these games on during the day, so people can't say, well, I can't watch West Coast basketball. I can't stay up late. No excuse. There have been plenty of opportunities to watch matinee basketball, but I don't want to be one-sided with my analysis. The East, while I don't think it's as compelling, does have many intriguing components to it. Bucks have a straightforward matchup round one against Orlando. No home bubble advantage. Magic dealing with injuries, as you know. Beyond that, it's going to come down to the depth of the Celtics, the depth of the reigning champs from Toronto, and we keep just overlooking the high basketball IQ of Nick Nurse and Pascal Siakam and Kyle Lowry and the rest defending that championship without Kawhi Leonard versus Giannis Antetokounmpo trying to do it with 1.5 complimentary stars. I'm not going to bash Chris Middleton. He is a very good player. But beyond that, who else you buying on the Milwaukee roster? You're going to ride with Eric Bledsoe? Okay. Good luck with that. And Giannis is so transformational, he may be able to be a virtual one-man show in front of the virtual fans on that big HD board, making the viewing product all the more compelling from my couch. But I think even though there are so many unknowns in the bubble, and this is unprecedented, some of the traditional norms apply. Norm. If you're going to win an NBA championship, you can't do it as a one-man show. You need at least one Hall of Famer balanced by a surrounding cast. And you can do it without the Hall of Famer. Go back to the Pistons team that shocked Shaq, Kobe, and Gary Payton and Karl Malone, unless you think Rip Hamilton, Chauncey Billup belong in Springfield, Mass. That is a team that got it done with a team concept without the transcendent star. The issue for the Bucks is Giannis is going to have to carry a superhuman load, and he's already, and I assume as a rational person we can make this statement, he's already, with his team of advisors, thinking about the future. because that's how it works in the NBA. It's not only the summer within the window of free agency that a superstar maps out what lies ahead. It's the summer before. So this feels a lot like Kevin Durant, where we talked about his future for the better part of 18 months. Well, we're a year away, contingent on when the NBA starts the next season, probably December, let's hope. But we're a calendar year away from Giannis being able to hit free agency. What if he can do almost the unthinkable? Carry this team as a solo artist with help from Middleton, Lopez, and Bledsoe. Well, at that point, doesn't Milwaukee effectively have the opportunity to say game over? They don't want it to be game on, because they can come to Giannis and say, you've already won with this bunch of supporting complementary talent. Stay here. Why would you leave? And let's build a dynasty together. But the first step to achieve that is to win it all against teams like Boston and Toronto, who have far more options coming off the bench. And I think, more to the point, a challenge from both of the LA teams, Lakers or Clippers. I'm going with the LA Clippers to win it all. Straight ahead, final hour coming up. Back to college football. Is there any chance of salvaging a fall season? Maybe just one of the Power Five conferences will play. That's next on CBS Sports Radio.